And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Anthony Cummings with us, How to Be a Modern Samurai. How long did it take you, Anthony, to write this book?
The actual writing took about 6 months to 8 months, but obviously it's based on about 10 years worth of research.
Research, sure. My gosh, yeah. What's next for you? What's your next project?
I'm actually doing a yin-yang book. Everybody talks about yin-yang, and it appears in Chinese culture and Japanese culture, but I found that there was really hardly any information, so that's where I'll be going to next.
And you're on YouTube too, aren't you? How do people find you there?
So basically, just type in, it's Anthony Cummings, it's A-N-T-O-N-Y, and it's C-U-M-M-I-N-S. Now, I've got a YouTube channel there, which I upload on two or three times a week, and I get as much information out there as possible. Or, of course, you can search the same name on Instagram.
Now, as of what is happening around the world these days, I would guess that if there's any leader that practices samurai, it would be Vladimir Putin from Russia. How's my guess?
I'll be honest with you, I don't know much about politics. I've stayed more in history. But, yes, I must admit, my answer will be a little bit shallow because I don't really know much about him. But what I've seen, he's a very disciplined, to-the-point person. I would say so, yes.
Yeah, he really is, and he's deliberate, and he seems to go through some of these 10 steps that I know of him pretty regularly.
I think the thing now is everybody's worried about saying the wrong thing to everyone, and that's not the samurai way. You've got to obviously not say anything insulting. You've got to be careful how you speak, but we're too careful now. Everybody's tiptoeing about everybody, and actually life has stopped working because of that.
No, you're right. We've become way too sensitive. I mean, I understand not offending people and, you know, being vulgar and things like that. But, I mean, everybody now is on eggshells.
Without a doubt. And things have changed. Adverts have changed. I'd say interviews have changed. Everybody sort of talks as though they have to apologize first in case somebody's offended. And then they'll, you know, dance around every subject and not say anything direct. So that's when what part of the way of the samurai is knowing when to act, but also knowing when not to act. So this is called the art of drawing the sword or not drawing the sword. It's not physically about drawing the sword. It means, should you act at that moment? Now, 99% of the time, don't act because there'll be consequences. But if you never act, you'll become coward-like. And like we are at the moment, everybody doesn't want to say anything. But you've got to pick those correct moments to say, no. Act now, that's it, even if it causes trouble for you.
How often did the samurai go into battle?
So that depends on the century. So in the 1400s and the 1500s, quite a lot. But actually, after that, in the 16, 17, and 1800s, there's very few skirmishes. There's some peasant revolts, but almost, you could say, no battles, with a couple of rare exceptions. So what we find there is the samurai start to get very zen-like and very philosophical. And because of that, we believe they're always this stoic, philosophical, zen-like samurai. But that's only because they had to change the way they approach life because there was just no battles anymore.
Were they ruthless in terms of warriors?
Without a shadow of a doubt, yes. And a lot of people don't realize they're a headhunting culture.
Literally.
Literally. And in fact, when we talk about headhunters, we always go back to the ancient Celts or we go to Africa. But nobody mentions the samurai. And all of samurai prestige is about getting the enemy's head. And there are special rituals and spells to protect you from vengeful ghosts. And there's even ways to prove that you have got the head. So what some samurai used to do was actually give false heads. So they'd kill someone who they'd say it was someone else and produce a nice piece of armor that they'd found off the battlefield and say, oh, this is a high-ranking person. Because that's how they used to get extra land and money.
You know, the mafia in the United States had some scruples where they avoided harming your wife and your kids and, you know, they wouldn't enter your home. Would the samurai practice such, you know, distance or did anything go with them?
Pretty much anything goes. They were total warfare.
Oh,
so this is where the samurai really get their fame, I think, is because they were all out. It was life or death. So most of the time, if you had your children and your family with you, if you didn't win, you know, inside a castle, if you like didn't get rid of the besiegers,
yeah,
you probably had to kill your own family.
Oh, before they got to them.
before they got to them. And most of them would commit suicide anyway. So one of the main things people used to do is kill the children, kill the women, and then they would cut open their own stomachs when setting fire to the castle. That is absolutely the way. But that doesn't mean samurai didn't surrender. There are ample cases of them doing that. But if they're cornered and it got to a position where they knew, you know, it was no way to make a deal, to make an alliance, many of them would just kill themselves.
What was the Japanese word for suicide? Was it harakiri or what was that?
It's actually seppuku is the polite word, and then it's the opposite word for it is harakiri. We all say harikari. But actually, it's harakiri, which means to cut the belly open.
That's how they did it?
Yeah, that's another interesting actual evolution. At the beginning, it wasn't a real thing. Samurai didn't do it. But there was a few samurai in battle that had literally got to the end of their tether. You know, they couldn't go anywhere. They were stuck. So they'd cut open their own stomachs. But some of them would actually... There's one episode of a guy leaping from his horse, putting the blade in his mouth and landing face first on his blade just to kill himself. And it's like, oh my word. You know, and then eventually it becomes a ritual. But what people don't realize is it's more of an execution by the end. People are forced to do it, or their entire family is killed and their clan will be dissolved.
Let's take some calls. Brandon's in San Diego starting us off. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, George. Hi, Anthony. I hope everybody's doing good this evening.
Thank you.
Hi, Brandon.
Hello. So I've been a big fan of Asian culture since I saw my first Kung Fu movie around the age of 3 or 4 years old. And with that, growing into adulthood, I've actually taken an interest in traditional Chinese medicine and Oriental medicine, which I'm actually starting school for in the fall. You said earlier in the program that a lot of the Japanese culture was derived from the Chinese culture. So my question to you is how did the samurai take care of themselves health-wise and maintain their longevity? Were they fans of the Oriental medicine, such as acupuncture, herbology, that type of thing? And also, as far as the magic you were speaking of, did they believe in chi or chakra or anything like that? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, let's start with the magic part, then we'll get into the medicine.
Right. Was it the magic, the chi, was it?
Yeah.
So... yes, they believe in qi, without a doubt. Qi, it's for us, we say qi, but technically it should be qi, even in China and Japan, but the different ways we pronounce it. They absolutely believed in that, without a doubt, it is there. The actual ideogram for qi is like a bowl of rice with the heat coming off it, and it's meant to be the same. Now, this qi is from the Taoist tradition. In the beginning, there was nothing, and then the beginning moved into two forces. That two forces created a positive and a negative, and that created energy, and that is qi, or ki. And they absolutely knew that was going around the earth, or to them they believed it. And that comes from China. However, they do acupuncture, but I very rarely found anything to do with chakras. Chakras tends to be an Indian thing. So when we're talking about those types of traditions in Japan, you have to divide it. Is it Indian Buddhist, or is it Chinese Taoist? And both of them exist together in different systems.
Why did they seem to fade away from these 10 principles?
That was modernization. It was literally modernization. So in come the Americans, Perry with the guns, and they actually have a little bit of a skirmish. They bombard. An English merchant is killed by a samurai, so the English just destroy a town from the gunship, and the samurai like, oh, well, what do we do? You know, there's nothing we can do. So they just started dismantling their own society.
Yeah, they did not have technology, did they?
No, they actually... this is the interesting point, is they actually were the leading manufacturers of guns in the 1500s. So about 1543, guns arrive in Japan. They buy some off the Portuguese, and they start making themselves, and they make them amazing. And then they're outproducing the world. Then the Tokugawa take over, they stop all trade with the West and stop the gun production. So by the time the 1800s comes around and Commodore Perry comes in, they're literally so far behind.
Who came up with gunpowder? The Chinese?
They think it was the Chinese, but it's actually debatable whether it's India or China. It's still out for debate. But the Chinese are the masters of gunpowder. However, can I just answer the gent's question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Medicine. So what we have on longevity is there's actually a samurai doctor's book that was published. I think it's out of print now. But the idea about health in Japan is these guys are healthy anyway. They've got a very restricted diet of rice, not so much fish, only in coastal areas, but there's lots of rice and beans and vegetables. And obviously whale fat, but nobody has whale, you know, they don't eat so many whales anymore. And then what they did is there's a lot of walking. The Japanese are famous for walking everywhere. So they're thin, they eat well, they're walking, and they tend to rebuild their chi. They say take time to relax, enjoy relaxation.
Will they ever get back to where they were in terms of these types of steps to success?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know, because the disappointing thing for me is every time I go back to Japan, and I've been there, I've lived there for over about 5 years on and off, and every time I go back, they get more and more Western. Now, that's not a problem, but I want to divide. A lot of people don't divide modern and Western either.
Right.
We have, in the West, an amazing culture that goes back, and it's as intricate as any culture, but we transformed it into the modern culture, and we dropped a lot of our things. And the Japanese, the Chinese, they're just dropping all their stuff left, right, and center. It's literally been stripped away from them.
Let's go to Hollywood, Maryland. Frank's with us. Hello, Frank.
Glad to be back with you, George. Your British guests are amazing, all of them.
Thank you.
Mr. Cummings, who decides, what is the title of the person who decides whether a ninja has what it takes to be a ninja? And have you ever thought to write a book about your British SAS, which is roughly equivalent to our Navy SEALs? Thank you. Great show.
Who picks the ninjas?
So, first of all, SAS-wise, there are a million books on those. There are loads of books on the SAS and Special Forces. And you always find somebody will mention the ninja in a Special Forces book without a shadow of a doubt. But I'd have to research a lot to get there. And what was the other question, George?
Who picks the ninjas, you know, when they're in those days?
Right. So each Japanese family... So each Japanese family has a tradition to themselves. Now, the ninja just appear in about the 1300s. It appears in one manual, and somebody just says, and they're called shinobi. So if you don't know, the word ninja is also pronounced shinobi no mono. And we through research, we've realized it's just shinobi no mono. Ninja is a later pronunciation. But what happens is people are born into specific families, and they are taught from children to do that. But what happens sometimes is somebody's very good at languages, or they're excellent at running fast or climbing. They can be brought in and taught the arts of the ninja. So that's two ways of doing it. You're either brought up as one, or people see your natural talent, bring you on board and train you. But it's very secretive, and each family has their own little secret aspects for it.
Let's go to Los Angeles. Mira's with us. Hi, Mira. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, George. I'm really enjoying the show this evening. Thank you so much for all you do, George.
Sure, and, absolutely.
And Anthony, you know, I can only imagine how nice Wales is, where you don't have to wear a mask in comparison to here.
Yeah.
Must be
if
wonderful.
You don't know Wales, it's a beautiful, green, rolling country. It's like living in the Shire from Lord of the Rings.
I can only imagine. And I can tell you that Los Angeles is filthier than ever. And they are shutting down bathrooms, even like grocery stores. And nobody can hear each other because there's these big plexiglass. Everybody's yelling. You know, a lot of people are yelling. So that's what's going on.
And I'm coming back to that, Mira. I'm in St. Louis, but I'm coming back to L.A. next week. Why, yikes.
Yeah, well, you know, people are managing, but they're making it really challenging. And some people, you know... I don't know, George. But, you know, I guess, you know, I'm just so interested in learning more about Anthony's work. I've been studying the I Ching.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is not the same philosophy, but just from listening to you speak, I'm getting a sense that there's, like, similarities there in terms of a philosophical approach to life. And I don't really recommend... like believing everything it says when you do coin tosses. Like, I feel like there's like a 10,000-year-old Chinese man in there that doesn't really get a woman's perspective, you know, this day and age. But I was just wondering if you if you have any thoughts on that, on the I Ching, if there's any similarity.
Right, yeah, that's the Book of Changes. So it's an ancient Chinese classic. Now, some people say it's the oldest book in the world. Actually, the version we have today was only re-put together in about 1770-something, but it is the oldest piece of sort of writing we have, if you like, that, you know, is a book, not just, you know, something on a wall somewhere. It's a genuinely a system that is very, very old. Now, the idea is it's called the Book of Changes because what it's meant to do is people are meant to engage with it when they need to change their life. So you throw the coins. Originally, there were storks, and it was very complicated. I can't do the stork version. But the samurai did have it. In some of the scrolls we've done, they absolutely do follow that book, the Book of Changes, and it does form one of those little branches of Chinese philosophy inside of Japan. It is there without a doubt.
Anthony, since you've been doing this, what was it about the ninjas, about the samurai, that really captured your attention to start investigating them?
Well, that one is always a difficult one to answer because I think I was born with it. I don't know what happened, but the ninjas were massive. 1978, I was born. The 1980s, Shogun comes out. You know, James Bond has been out for about 10, 15 years. You know, you only live twice.
Right.
Everybody's gone Japan mad. And I, for some reason, was just obsessed from the earliest age ever about ninjas. And it just never left me. And by the time I got to finish university, I was like, I need to go to... It was actually quite magical. My last day of university was... I didn't have the internet in the house. It was just early 2000s where we're all getting it in the houses. And I went to university to actually log on for the last time and use their internet. And an email came in and said, why don't you teach English in Japan? I was like, okay. And within 3 weeks, I was in Japan teaching. And then I picked up different people on my quest to find the answers about ninja.
Were you out there during the Fukushima disaster?
No, I was home for that. But obviously, we started phoning everyone in Japan, make sure they're all there. But that is an example of how Japan has changed from samurai times. In the warring periods, in the 1500s, somebody would have said something about that to their superior. They'd have said something's wrong, and they'd have questioned their superior. But after years and years of a dictatorship from 1600 to the 1800s, and then... you know, nationalism in the 1930s, people do not question their superiors. So that was just one of those things that Japan has failed at. It's forgotten the way of the samurai, and they just follow what they think it should be.
Japan could not take on China if they have this dispute over islands or anything like that, could they?
No, I don't. In fact, Japan don't even have a military force, really. They have their self-defense force because the Americans technically still have them down to no, you know, the Americans look after Japan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I still think China's got their eyes on Taiwan, Anthony.
Right. It's getting a bit of... It's gone weird. It's like you've got all the rioting going on. You've got the COVID going on. You've now got this sort of semi-Cold War thing going on. It just, I can't believe the speed in which we've reversed.
It's crazy times. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take some final phone calls next. On our next Coast to Coast program, V, the Gorilla Economist, joins us to talk about these strange times we're in economically. And then later in the program, investigative mythologist William Henry joins us with some really strange things. So make sure you're part of that Coast to Coast program. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie here, our final segment with Anthony Cummings. Anthony, in your other book, The Art of War, can these techniques be used in business to help businesses flourish?
They can, but what I tried to avoid doing was actually just reproducing another, you know, art of war for business, because what happens is you get the opinion of the person writing it and their business experience. So when I did this, The Ultimate Art of War, I just got down to the bare bones of what does Sun Tzu say? But what it does do is teach you how to think strategically. If you go and study it, your mind will change and adapt throughout it.
Well, it's an amazing... Sun Tzu, what made him such an amazing thinker and a tactician?
So before Sun Tzu, there was still the art of war. It did exist. People think he invented it. That's not true. It was, you know, but he's the first, well, not the first, but one of the first to really write down how it goes. Now, what the other... There's a lot of other military thinkers in China, but what happened was is they tended to write long dialogues and this, and there was lots of, you know, cultural things you need to understand about China. Sun Tzu just gets to the nitty-gritty of it. It's like this, don't do this, in this situation, do this. But because it's written in ancient Chinese, it can be sometimes difficult to get through to it. So I decided to make illustrations for all of it, explain it all, and also tell you which translator has used which translation and how they differ, just so people can really, really get to the bottom of the book.
Technology aside, if you were a tactician in the Navy or the Marines or the military, would you use the Art of War? Would you learn it?
To my understanding, they still teach it in pretty much all modern military. It is standard reading, I think, for most.
That's amazing. All right, back to the calls. Joe, Long Island, New York, to get us started. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, Anthony, great show. Two-part question on war and then on class, I have a question. On war, the movie The Gray, at the end of it, Liam Neeson, you know, he's facing Timberwolves and he thought he got away. And then suddenly he's surrounded. He's in a wolf's den and he puts on those gloves with knives. And the movie ends there, but it wasn't looking too good for him. So that's one scenario in war where, you know, you're outnumbered in the moment. And is Zhang going to help you? And a second movie was Lord of the Rings. At the end, this guy Sauron at the tower was still around. The overseer. How would you break through that? It's like a Walls of Jericho thing, maybe. How would you, from a distance, fight someone like Sauron? And my second question would be on class. A movie which would be from your neck of the woods, the UK, I believe, Cinderella. You know, there's maybe a yin-yang there, you know, where the Cinderella is not really in the class of the prince. But what do you think of that? Was she really deserving of being with the prince?
Okie dokie. Right, first of all, The Grey, when he's got the bottle knives at the end, that is absolutely, he's outnumbered, he's lost his troops, he's at his end, he has been defeated by the wolves. Now, if you watch to the end of the credits, I've actually seen this, you hear a wolf yelp. And the point is I think he actually survives. But he there has absolutely lost all of his people, he's gotten into the wrong enemy territory, and he's been surrounded by the enemy. He did everything incorrect, basically. Lord of the Rings is a superb idea of strategy. Now, at the end, the tower's there, the eye is looking about, and in the film version, Aragorn goes along to take the eye, to bring the people out of the gate. That is exactly what Sun Tzu says. If somebody's in a position that is ridiculously defensible, you need to give them something to move away from it. Always lure them out. So I think that's a perfect example. But I've not seen the other film, Class. I've not seen that.
And Joe, talk a little bit more about your Cinderella thing.
Yeah, with Cinderella, the idea of just she was supposedly out of her league. I mean, in the Middle Ages, say there was such a scenario, you know, where a woman wanted to meet a prince. Would she apply these techniques, or would she just say, forget it, you know, that I'm not going to get a prince?
Right, that depends on the culture. In Japan, you couldn't really marry into the imperial family, pieces like that, unless you were really powerful. So it's about power. So some people have power through name, some people have power through money, and some people have power through force. So if you have the power, you can do it. Now, obviously, Cinderella has the power of beauty. So she is beautiful, therefore the prince comes, you know, and he actually takes her in that way. So it's all about power structure. And for females, obviously being beautiful, they have power over males all the time. And also, if you, one of the samurai, well, I've said that to girls, they like to say, oh, I feel, you know, no power, you've got loads of it, don't worry, you've got all the power. And I forgot what I was going to say on the next bit then, never mind.
So let's move on.
Yeah, no problem.
Let's go to Henry in North Hollywood, California. Hi, Henry.
Anthony, what can you tell me about Momotaro and the Kappa?
Ah, okay. Is it Momotaro, I think, the peach boy?
He's gone.
Yeah. He's the peach boy. Yeah.
Yep. So basically, these are all Japanese fairy tales or folklores. So the peach boy, I can't remember the story. It's a child's story. but they're actually in the English language. You can find, just put in Japanese fairy tales, and they come out. And I think it's a boy who lives in a peach, but I don't remember the moral of the story.
He lives in a peach?
Yeah, he totally does it. But Kappa are one of these Japanese monsters, these yokai, if you like. So if you what they do is they wait in rivers. They like half turtle, half humans, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But they have a bowl in their head. And when they stand up, if you make them bow and the water falls out, they have to run away. But they're actually, in real folklore, quite vicious. They rape people, and people have said, you know, they've dragged them into the water and killed them. And there are folklore is that if you catch one, you butcher it.
Why would a boy live in a peach, Anthony?
Yeah, I can't remember why he lives in a peach. I think it's the same as we put people in baskets in the river or something like that to survive. He ends up in a peach for some reason. But it's been so long since I've read it. And it's only one story out of, like, it's like the Grimm's fairy tales for Japan.
I got to check that one out. Let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Ed's with us. Hi, Ed. Go ahead.
Hey, George.
Hey.
Yeah, great shows as usual. I've been listening and often not calling, but Anthony, Dr. Wallach earlier was talking about rice and for a wine and drink and staying away from carbs, and the Japanese outlive everyone else, as we know. And outside of the Bible, my favorite book I've ever read is George Osawa, The Father of Macrobiotics, The Art of Peace. And I was going to kind of ask you about that. And one, I can tell you one quick story on patience, George, if you got a second.
Yeah, sure thing.
From that book. The masters over there often don't talk a lot, from what I understand. They just show and demonstrate, and the right students fall in place. But one German Olympic champion in sharpshooting in the 30s came to Japan, and his friend knew this top master archer, and he wanted to learn archery. And the guy wouldn't take him until about a year or so before he was to go back to Germany, and so he took him because of the friend, and he made him stand about 15 feet from a big target and shoot arrows into it for a year. That's all he had him do. So the guy was kind of upset about it and getting ready to go back to Germany, and so he said, come see me, meet me tonight. So they came, and they went to a field, and he put a candle under a target and went about 100 yards away. And he shot an arrow into the air, and then he shot another arrow into the air, and they went and checked it, and the first arrow was in the middle of the target, and the second one split the first one in half.
Love that.
Yeah, so the question is about which question?
About Osawa, and anything. The Art of Peace has been my favorite book I've ever read. He covered a lot of things here, including Jesus and so forth. I just wondered if you were familiar with it.
No, I've not read that, I'm afraid. Very similar, the story you've just said is like Zen and the Art of Archery. Have you read that? That's a very popular book. And when you're talking about this Zen idea, the idea is that it's like one shot, one kill for the samurai. And they would be riding on horseback, and they have to visualize the target. And this is what I was saying before, you absolutely have to stop going to the highest level and do the basics. If that man is made to do the basics over and over and over again, that's what makes an expert, not some, you know, trick shooting.
Are you happy with the way the book came out?
The How to Be a Modern Samurai?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I am, actually. I was a bit nervous at first because I've never written anything like that. People were saying, you know, my publisher was like, go on, give it a go, you know, I'm sure you can do it. And I thought, is it too cheesy? Is it, you know, will people like it? But I gave it to a few friends and, you know, other people, and they were like, actually, they were hooked on it. And that reaction, you know, when friends pretend to like it, they were actually hooked on it. And I thought, there we go, that's my answer.
Let's go to Rob, Cheyenne, Wyoming, on the wild card line. Hello, Rob.
Yeah, hi. So I went over to Japan, and I taught English over there. And I have to say I'm just endlessly impressed with your breadth of knowledge. I would recommend, just based on listening to your show, Mr. Noy, and Anthony, your comments, I'd recommend anybody, you know, pick up and read whatever it is that you have to say.
That's very kind.
And secondly, so my experience is pretty different than yours, being American. If you have a second, I'd be interested if you had any comments on how to understand whales. But so one thing I noticed was, so I went to Hiroshima, and we leveled that city. I mean, there was not very much which was left after it was bombed. which was higher than maybe your knee or a man's head. So the thing that was very interesting, and maybe you have a comment on this, is how the Japanese, despite that, and despite some brainwashing in their education, managed to really deal with Americans extremely well. When you look at our Civil War and, you know, Sherman's March to the Sea, we still have people that are upset about that. And we obliterated two Japanese cities. And somehow, I don't know if this traces back to the samurai or not, they have been really wonderful enough to be on pretty great terms with us. And then just one other thing, too. I think I differ with you in that I think the spirit of the Japanese is still a little bit like it was, and they're not something to be messed with. I think the Chinese on some level must know, hey, that's something not to mess with. That's a Pandora's box that, you know, like when Perry went over there and opened up the country, that probably never should have been done, just based on the events that unfolded after that. But I'll get off, sorry to say so much. But and then one more thing. I would recommend everybody become familiar with Japan and maybe watch NHK TV if they have it, or look on the internet and look at Japan Times and see contemporary stuff about what's going on now, because it is just a fascinating country. Sorry to have said so much.
That's okay. No, don't apologize, Robin. What about the Japanese mentality and patience? What do you think, Anthony?
This idea of them being okay with the Americans after two nuclear weapons and everything, people have studied this for a long time. The Japanese just got on with it. Now, maybe there's a lot more to it, but what you have to remember is they had come out of that period of dictatorship, the Edo period, and, you know, they were used to being controlled, so swapping one master for another, you know, might have been easy for the population. But it is a tribute to the Japanese that they absolutely are okay. They love America. They've got baseball. They've got McDonald's. They embrace it. They love it. And the gentleman is absolutely right. They just got on with it and no problem. And it's a mystery of how they do it. However, what we do know about the Japanese is they're extremely good at appropriating things and making it Japanese. Like, most of their culture is Chinese, and then the next thing they're doing, whiskey. They beat the Scottish at whiskey. So the one guy went to Scotland and learned how to make whiskey, came back, and now Japanese whiskey is worldwide.
Made it great. Huh?
They just make it good. They're just so good at
that. Why in God's name did they attack us at Pearl Harbor?
Bizarrely, I've just watched the new program, that Midway film, with the Pearl Harbor. And that's actually, I suppose, not a bad idea. They were like, if we can cripple you, we'll do it and then attack. But actually, I think it's Admiral Yamamoto was all against it. There was actually a lot of internal rivalry, and the country had been whipped up into a frenzy, and probably it was a mistake.
Yep. What did he say? We're going to awake a sleeping giant?
Giant, yep. And he was correct. And he's like, we get all our oil. That was where fanaticism was not the way of the samurai. The way of the samurai would not have done that. They've said, no, that's a ridiculous idea. And then, you know, let's not attack America for no reason, you know, not being able to do it. And they just were fanatical at that point. And it was a cliche understanding of the samurai, not a reality.
Anthony, take about 20 seconds. Mention your websites and your YouTube.
Right. Basically, guys, if you want to follow me, it'd be really good if you follow me on Anthony Cummins on YouTube. And if you want to look at my website, it's natori.co.uk. That's natori.co.uk. And lastly, if you're on Facebook, look up Natori Ryu Hub, H-U-B, and see what we do over there at the Samurai School.
Anthony, thanks again for being on the program. Appreciate all your work. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.